The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, well, we made it to a Thursday, and it is a busy, busy news day. First of all, the Ryan tax scam passed the House of Representatives by a vote of 227 to 205. Every Democrat voted against it, and 13 Republicans, a whopping 13 Republicans, voted against this bill that will really hurt lower-income and middle-class Americans. We'll probably get a little into that with Howie Klein today when he joins us. Other stuff that went on, the FCC voted along party lines 3-2 to gut the ownership, cross-ownership rules, basically clearing the way for the Tribune, Sinclair takeover to happen, which will further erode our media landscape and make it so that right-wing voices are in the majority of homes in America. Yeah, it's not a good thing. Lots more stuff going on, but one story really overshadowed everything else. Even as late last night, I believe four more women came forward to accuse Roy Moore of improper advances on them when they were teenagers. That's all been overshadowed by a woman named Leanne Tweeden, who does the news on the morning show at KABC Radio in Los Angeles. She posted on the station's website this morning her account of being sexually harassed by none other than Al Franken when the two of them were part of a USO tour in Afghanistan in 2006. Franken, at the time, it was before he was a senator. He was on Air America Radio. And Leanne Tweeden tells the story of that he was the headliner of the tour. And he wrote some skits, including one that she was supposed to be in. Now, she mentions that, you know, she was a model for FHM and Playboy and Maxim. I know she was a regular, a fairly frequent guest on Sean Hannity's show and on the Howard Stern show as well. Now she's doing news in LA. And none of that makes any difference really, except perhaps, maybe in Al Franken's mind, if, you know, she's posing for Playboy, that maybe she'd be open to, I don't know, something that wasn't right. And I'm not making excuses, so don't take it that way. She laid on some pretty heavy duty allegations, including that in the skit there was a part where he was supposed to come up to her and kiss her, and she alleges that he wanted to rehearse when no one else was around, and kept saying we have to rehearse the kiss, and she said, no, we don't have to rehearse the kiss. And basically, she alleges that he grabbed her head and thrust his face into hers and his tongue in her mouth. And she said, you know what, I don't have this right here. But basically, she immediately ran to the bathroom to wash the taste of him out of her mouth. And that she didn't tell anybody about it. Now, afterwards, when they were on the plane headed home, she said she was exhausted and she fell asleep, and Al Franken posed for a picture. If you're watching on YouTube, I've got the picture up on the screen, and it looks like he's got his hands on her breasts. Although if you look closely, you can see the shadow under his hand. So thank goodness he's not officially touching her. Not that it makes this picture okay, because the picture is actually quite sickening and disgusting because it's not funny. Al Franken put out an apology, a sort of a tepid apology in the first place. He wrote, I certainly don't remember the rehearsal for the skit in the same way, but I send my sincerest apologies to Leanne. As to the photo, it was clearly intended to be funny, but it wasn't. I shouldn't have done it. That wasn't good enough. And certainly on Twitter, the reaction was pretty strong. By the way, the reaction from many of Al Franken's colleagues was pretty strong. Mitch McConnell wrote very, very soon after the allegations broke, as with all credible allegations of sexual harassment or assault, I believe the Ethics Committee should review the matter. I hope the Democratic leader will join me on this. Regardless of party, harassment and assault are completely unacceptable in the workplace or anywhere else. As the day went on, and the condemnation from his colleagues, and I should add that not a single one said, if true, then. They all basically took Leanne Tweeden's word for what she said as fact. I alluded to this the other day when we were only talking about Roy Moore and, people in Hollywood before Al Franken or any Democrat came into this discussion. There's a little bit of a slippery slope, because if someone has an ulterior motive, and I'm not alleging that here, I'm just saying, we're in a place where people are taking the word of the accuser, which is, it's about time. Finally, people are listening to these women who've been harassed, who've been assaulted, and believing them. And it's been a long time coming. And so thank goodness that that's happening. I'm just saying this opens the door to less scrupulous people making accusations that might not be true. And it's dangerous when someone is decided to be guilty before being adjudicated as such. In this case, her account sounds totally feasible. I don't know Al Franken well. I met him in person once. He was gone from Air America by the time I started working there, and I never worked out of Air America studios in New York. I always did my show from my studio at home in Florida. So I don't know him. I think he's become a pretty good senator, but these allegations are troubling. And his first response was troubling as well, right? So Al Franken then released a lengthier statement. Here's what he wrote. The first thing I want to do is apologize to Leanne, to everyone else who was part of that tour, to everyone who has worked for me, to everyone I represent, and to everyone who counts on me to be an ally and supporter and champion of women. There's more I want to say, but the first and most important thing, and if it's the only thing you care to hear, that's fine, is I'm sorry. And he goes on. It's a fairly lengthy statement. But he concludes it by saying, while I don't remember the rehearsal for the skit as Leanne does, I understand why we need to listen to and believe women's experiences. I'm asking that an ethics investigation be undertaken, and I will gladly cooperate. Wow, that's a change of pace. And finally, he says, and the truth is, what people think of me in light of this is far less important than what people think of women who continue to come forward to tell their stories. They deserve to be heard and believed, and they deserve to know that I am their ally and supporter. I have let them down and am committed to making it up to them. So at least, you know, Al Franken is saying mea culpa. He's apologizing with no holds barred. He's saying, bring on the investigation. It should happen, and I will cooperate. So that's all going on. Now, at the same time, a new film has just been released by Brave New Films. It's a really short one. It's only 3 minutes, and I'm going to play it for you here because it's really important that we keep this in mind. On the right, they're coming with knives out. They said Al Franken needs to resign. I'm just looking at Twitter today, and it is virulent against Al Franken. And all of his colleagues are saying that there needs to be an ethics investigation. And so Mitch McConnell's calling for it. I believe Chuck Schumer has agreed to it. And Al Franken has agreed to it. I just want to play for you Robert Greenwald's film from Brave New Films. It's called 16 Women and Donald Trump. 16 women and Donald Trump. I'll read for those of you who are listening, if there's no audio on the screen. there's an allegation from Kathy Heller.
He absolutely groped me, and he just slipped his hand there, touching my private part.
He turned to me and embraced me and gave me a kiss on the lips, and I remember being shocked, and because I would have just thought to shake somebody's hand, but that was his first response with me.
Number four was Cassandra Searles, who said he continually grabbed my ass and invited me to his hotel room.
It was a real shock when all of a sudden his hands were all over me. But it's when he started putting his hand up my skirt. And that was it. That was it.
The person on my right, who unbeknownst to me at that time was Donald Trump, put their hand up my skirt. He did touch my vagina through my underwear.
As the women walked across the table, Donald Trump would look up under their skirt and, you know, comment on whether they had underwear or didn't have underwear. I didn't want to have to walk across the table. I wanted to get out of there.
Then his hand touched the right inside of my breast. I felt intimidated and I felt powerless.
Lana was standing right next to him when he touched my butt. She also caught him the first encounter that we had.
Number 10, Rachel Crooks. Kissed me directly on the mouth. It was so inappropriate. I thought,
I don't really care if he finds me attractive or not. Or apparently he found me attractive enough 11 years ago. I think that he's saying there that only pretty women get assaulted. Is that what he's saying? I can't, it's hard sometimes to decipher.
When we entered the room, he grabbed each of us tightly in a hug and kissed each one of us without asking permission. After that, I received another call from either Donald or a male calling on his behalf, offering me $10,000. His actions are a huge testament to his character, that of uncontrollable misogyny, entitlement, and being a sexual assault apologist.
Number 13, Nini Laksonen. He really grabbed my butt, she said. Who said Mr. Trump was a slimy man?
You know, sitting there in my robe and having, you know, my makeup and hair done and everything, and he comes walking in, and I was just like, oh my goodness,
so
like, what is he doing back here?
So
I saw him walk into the dressing room.
He just came strolling right in. There was no second to put a robe on or any sort of clothing or anything. Some girls were topless, other girls were naked. Waltzing in, when we're naked or half naked in a very physically vulnerable position.
And he came to me and started kissing me open mouthed as he was pulling me towards him. He then grabbed my shoulder and began kissing me again very aggressively and placed his hand on my breast. And I said, come on, man, get real. He repeated my words back to me, get real, as he began thrusting his genitals.
Listen, support, speak out. From Brave New Films. That is a new video out from Robert Greenwald, Brave New Films. Call Me Trip in the chat room says, it feels like whataboutism. We can take our own trash out. We can take our own trash out. They're going to do an ethics investigation into Al Franken, as should happen. As Al Franken said, I welcome it. I will cooperate. Where's the ethics investigation into Donald Trump? Why is this administration allowed to get away with just saying, saying that all of his accusers are lying, as Sarah Sanders did just very recently in one of the press briefings. I guess there's one going on now. Meanwhile, Trump has not yet commented on Roy Moore. He was going to listen to what Sean Hannity had to say. And I guess last night Hannity punted on his threat. So regardless, the allegations Leanne Tweeden made against Al Franken are serious. And they it looks like they're being taken seriously. Again, his colleagues are all to a one saying that, that this is unacceptable behavior, and nobody is giving him a pass on it. There are no nobody is saying You know, if he did it, then so-and-so. Nobody is giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm not saying they should. Again, the allegations seem pretty spot on. And Speedbird in the chat room is saying, my issue, the only one I have with all the idea of guilty until proven innocent, and that's what I was getting at before. Not relating to this incident, but I did bring it up last week when we were talking about the floodgates opening to all of these allegations coming forth. Now we are believing the women as, look, I believe the women. If they make an allegation that somebody did this, I think it's pretty clear from the Washington Post article, the very first one on Roy Moore, that it was meticulously sourced. They had 30 sources. 4 women put their names on it. Then the 5th woman came forward. And then as of last night, 4 more came forward. I just think when there's that much smoke, there's fire. Now, I'm waiting to see, will there be more allegations coming for Al Franken? Because if again, I have no reason to doubt what this woman is saying, what Leanne Tweeden is saying. But usually the behavior is if they do it once, they do it more than once. And I would expect to see some other others come forward. All right. I blew through what's new. So let's just let's do this. I read the news today. Oh, boy. And check in with the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. We've got Victoria Jones on the line today. Hey, Victoria.
Hey.
Hey, so I was just going over this, the allegations against Al Franken, which is, it's a pretty stunning story, but no reason to doubt what this woman is saying is true.
Well, no, particularly since he's apologized for it.
And
that he perceived it differently, but he's apologized for it, and he's asked for an ethics investigation.
That's right. And it was a, you know, as they say, a full-throated apology. It was his first statement was lacking a little bit, but he came out with a longer, more in-depth statement, and he said, look, I was wrong. I apologize to everyone involved, and you know, especially the Leanne Tweeden. So this is just sad. And, you know, and as I was saying, not regarding this incident, but regarding the floodgates opening of all these women coming forward, we are at a dangerous spot because we used to have, you know, presumption of innocent till proven guilty. Well, in most of these cases, especially when you look at Roy Moore, so we're talking about things going back 40 years, there's not going to be a trial. There's nothing to be found guilty of because it's never going to go to court. But you know, we're if some unscrupulous person comes forward and says so and so assaulted me, without any proof, it's just a slippery slope we're walking. And again, I'm not saying I doubt what Leanne Tweeden is saying. Her account looks like it very easily could have happened.
Have you seen the picture?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen the picture?
I saw the picture. And I'll tell you one thing about the picture is, and I'm not making excuses for Al Franken by any means. Although she says he grabbed my breasts while I was sleeping. I didn't know about it until afterwards. And I got home and I looked through the pictures. You can see a shadow of his hands underneath. So it looks like he was mugging for the camera. I don't think he was actually grabbing her breasts, which is what she alleged he did. In fact, his left hand, you could tell, is not touching. And there's a shadow there. It looks like I examined it a little too closely. But regardless, the picture was sleazy and it was wrong and it wasn't funny.
No, it wasn't funny at all.
And he apologized for that, too. So at least, you know, that's something he's done that Roy Moore hasn't done, is apologize. So Mitch McConnell has called for an ethics investigation. Somebody pointed out that there was an ethics investigation into David Vitter, too. David Vitter was cleared of wrongdoing because they found the actions he engaged in happened before he was in the Senate.
Well, I mean, the ethics committee doesn't usually, you know, do a lot.
No.
Well, no, it doesn't often find that much, but nevertheless, it is something. It is something. Some people are calling on him to resign.
Republicans.
That's a bit premature.
Yes. Now, Republicans are trying to make this a partisan deal. And the thing is, it isn't. It's got nothing to do with politics. And I've been on Twitter most of the day today, and I'm seeing a lot of condemnation from, you know, from the grassroots, from the most liberal of liberals. They're not making excuses for him, and they're not giving him a break. A lot of them are saying he needs to resign. In terms of colleagues in the Senate, most of them are sort of condemning the actions of stopping short of saying he should resign.
Right. They're saying that there should be an investigation. I think that mm-hmm. once you're actually in the Senate, they tend to call for investigations. It's a different standard from letting you into the
right.
Senate.
And that's a big difference. There's also a difference when you're talking about assaulting children.
And serial assaulting, and
exactly,
which is what we're hearing with Roy Moore. And it's not just children with Roy Moore. One of the people who came forward, children and late teens.
Mm-hmm.
One of the women who came forward, who spoke to Alabama.com, because there were three women we heard about last night. Two spoke to the Post, and there were numerous people quoted in the Post, but two with actual stories. But the woman who spoke to Alabama.com, she was 28. So that I think is very interesting, because it's telling us that Roy Moore was not just interested in very young women.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently interested in all women, in exerting power over all women. This was an incident. This woman came with her mother to his law office for a professional appointment. It was an issue involving child custody.
Mm-hmm.
And while she was there, he ogled her. He repeatedly complimented her. And she could recall a number of the things that he said to her. And this went on throughout she's trying to have a business meeting.
Ugh.
And then as they left, her mother went out of the room first, and he follows them to the door. Mother leaves first, and as she gets to the door, she's going out the door, he grabbed both her buttocks.
Oh, God. Yes, and she said, it was not a pinch, he grabbed me.
Yeah, he grabbed me.
Yeah.
Now, that's a 28-year-old woman. So I think this is very interesting. He was, you know, in his 30s. I'm waiting to see if women are going to come forward from later in his career, because I would be surprised. I'm not making an accusation, but I would be surprised if some zap of lightning suddenly occurred and Roy Moore stopped this behavior. It could happen.
Of course, yeah. Well, but doubtful. So that's what I was saying. If there's a problem with Al Franken, others will come forward, as they have with Kevin Spacey, as they have with Louis C.K., as they have, you know, with others that we're hearing this troubling behavior from. So, do I hope this is an isolated incident? Yes. Something just came across my Twitter feed that sources briefed on the matter tell Manu Raju of CNN, an emotional and upset Senator Franken apologized to staff today after revelations he groped a woman in 2006. Hasn't spoken to most of his colleagues, skipping all Senate vote and Democratic lunch today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's very, very intriguing here. Also, that apparently Roger Stone
uh-huh.
hinted, now he's been banned from Twitter, but there is a Twitter account associated with him, hinted that it was Al Franken's turn in the barrel.
Yep, I saw that. He tweeted that out last night. So he knew this was coming. And the other thing is that this woman, Leanne Tweeden, who does news on the morning show at KABC Radio in Los Angeles, she apparently was a frequent guest on Sean Hannity's radio show, and they're friends. So I've, you know, she is a right winger. Not saying that she made anything up, but maybe the timing of this was calculated. For whatever reason, I don't know. The whole thing is just distasteful and horrible. And this is a day. There's a lot of news today, so let's talk about other stuff that's going on. The Senate, the House voted 227 to 205 to pass the Ryan, what I call, tax scam.
Yes, the House did, and President Trump was on the Hill earlier. So that happened. And the Senate, however, is in a little more trouble. So we wait to see what happens with that, because ever since at night on Tuesday, and I say that deliberately because these things always seem to happen at night. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. But at night on Tuesday, the tax writers in the Senate added two provisions to the Senate bill that have made it more problematic. One, as you know, one of them, of course, is getting rid of the individual mandate in Obamacare, and the other one is making the individual tax breaks temporary. And one Republican has come out against it, and others may. So we will see what happens with that. Now, there are some other quite interesting stories in the news mm-hmm. that I'd like to get to in the short time that we have.
Yeah.
One of them is that a coalition of rights groups launched an online petition today urging IBM to declare that it will not develop technology to help the Trump administration carry out a proposal to identify people for visa denial and deportation from the United States.
Really?
Now, the rights group said the proposals run counter to IBM's stated goals of protecting dreamer immigrants from deportation. It's very interesting. It's part of it, and this petition is tied to a broader advocacy campaign also begun today that objects to ICE's extreme vetting initiative. Now, it's very interesting. IBM has objected in an email that Reuters saw to discrimination, but ICE wants to use machine learning technology and social media monitoring to determine whether an individual is a, quote, positively contributing member of society, unquote, according to documents published on federal contracting websites. Now, more than 50 civil society groups and more than 50 technical experts sent separate letters today to the Department of Homeland Security saying the vetting program as described was, quote, tailor-made for discrimination, and they say that artificial intelligence is unable to provide the information that ICE wants.
Wow. This is more and more Big Brotherish with each passing day, I'll tell you.
I thought you'd be interested in that.
Very much so.
Also, a bipartisan group of senators is trying to strengthen reporting to the national background check system in the wake of the mass shooting in Texas and the one in Las Vegas and, of course, the extraordinary rampage this week by a man. Have you seen the picture of that man?
I did. Scary looking.
You want to meet him in an alley?
No, I don't want to meet him at all. And thank goodness he's dead. Yeah.
So the bipartisan group is very interesting. Senators John Cornyn of Texas, Chris Murphy of Connecticut, Tim Scott of South Carolina, and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Well, the two senators from Connecticut, where Newtown was. So
exactly. Right. But working with John Cornyn and Tim Scott. So their legislation would require states and agencies to produce plans for sending records to the National Instant Background Check System that would show if an individual is prohibited from buying a gun and verifying that the information's right. And it would also try to incentivize agencies and states to provide the information by blocking bonus pay for political appointees in the agencies that don't get their act together and upload records to the background check system, and give rewards to states that do get it right.
Wow. Good. You know, about time they do something. We'll see if this goes anywhere.
Yeah, so they did something today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Leaders of the Senate Judiciary Committee said today they've not received information they requested from President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, including emails, phone records, and documents related to communications with former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. They also say that Jared Kushner received an email about WikiLeaks in the lead-up to the presidential election. He was contacted about WikiLeaks and Russia, and he didn't disclose it.
Why am I not surprised?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Mm.
Curiouser.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Yes.
There's one last thing, that Trump is considering OMB Director Mick Mulvaney to be the interim director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau because Richard Cordray announced yesterday he'll be stepping down at the end of the month, probably to run to be the senator, the governor of Ohio. But Mulvaney once called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau a sad, sick joke. We're hearing that this appointment could come as soon as today or tomorrow. And because he's already been confirmed by the Senate, they don't have to go through a confirmation hearing again for this.
Yes, so that would be an interesting direction for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to take.
Yeah, I think they'll have to change its name because it won't do anything to protect consumers.
I think it would become a very different agency.
Yes.
And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, as you know it right now, is effectively as over as President Mugabe's rule in Zimbabwe.
I think you are right. With that, Victoria Jones of the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Thank you so much, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. I'll talk to you. I won't talk to you next week, so have a happy Thanksgiving.
And to you, too.
Thank you very much. We'll see you the week after. Bye.
Okay.
All right. Howie Klein is up next. It is Thursday, so stick around. We got Howie Klein next on the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
These are the sounds of crushed souls, the sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio, and you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing
today?
Hope
you're well.
I'm doing very well, thank you. And you?
Also.
Good.
Feeling like two conflicting feelings today, actually. One, the horror of Ryan being able to pass that idiotic tax scam of
mm-hmm.
his, and the other of a tsunami that just grew by 10 feet and is going to wipe away more Republicans. I mean, it's like only three California Republicans out of 14 voted no. That means the other, 11 or something? Yeah, the other 11, they signed a suicide pact. Now, some of them are in districts that maybe are too red, but I think that the majority of the California Republicans will be defeated a year from now. And a lot of it will have to do, not entirely, but a lot of it will have to do with this bill that they passed today, this tax bill, which probably is going to be defeated in the Senate anyway. Anyway,
I have two
conflicting feelings. You know, before you start asking me questions, can I just like throw something in here?
Yes, of course.
Is it okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know how closely your listeners follow the Oklahoma State Senatorial election on Tuesday. But that's a really important thing that people should remember, that nobody in the world, including me, nobody thought there was any chance for the Democrats to pick up this the state Senate seat in Oklahoma that was up. It was a it's as red a district as you're going to find anywhere. It's a little district southwest of Tulsa. It's not in the city. It was something I think I remember it was like 82 or 83% white. And it's so Republican that Trump won it by 40 points.
Wow.
And then the Republican nominee was just thought, well, he's going to win this without ever having to even fight. He spent three times more money than the Democrat. And the Democrat wasn't just some random Democrat. She was a progressive. And she campaigned as a progressive. And she's an out-of-the-closet, upfront lesbian married to an African-American woman.
Wow.
And they've got a bunch of kids. So you think in a Bible Belt district in red, suburban and exurban Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there's not even a contest here.
This
and
underscores...
It was very close, but the Democrat won.
Yes.
She won the seat. If that seat can be won, a seat like that can be won, that means there is no safe Republican seat anywhere in America. That means any seat that is competently contested can be won. And like I've said before, it's not who raises the most money. In a tsunami election, in a wave election, the challenger just needs to have enough money to get his or her message out there. They don't need to match what the incumbent raises, and they
mm-hmm.
don't. And both in 2006 and in the last Democratic wave and in 2010, the last Republican wave, both those years, challengers didn't raise anywhere near what the incumbents raised, and they won anyway. Massive victories in 2010 for the Republicans and in 2006 for the Democrats.
Right. This underscores...
So I think there's going to be a major, major change in Congress next year.
Right. Well, so, if we have enough good candidates, this underscores everything you've been talking about, Howie, everything you say every week, where instead of voting for Republican light, if people want a Republican, they'll vote for a Republican. This woman, Allison Ickley Freeman, she won as a staunch progressive in Oklahoma, of all places. And for people who say that their vote doesn't count, she won by 31 votes.
Yep, that's right. So it was very, very close, but she won. That's the point. She
mm-hmm.
won the seat. And in a district so red, I mean, there's no PVI that I've seen for this district, but I would guess the PVI is R plus 25, something like that. I mean, that's how incredibly red the district is. But you hit the nail right on the head. Recruiting matters, and who the candidates are matter. I don't know if she would have won or lost if she was just a blue dog type or a New Dem type. Maybe she would have won more, or maybe she would have lost entirely by not inspiring people to come out. But that was the main game there, not competing with Republicans, but getting the Democratic base to come out. You know, Republicans vote for Republicans. Democrats
mm-hmm.
vote for Democrats. And independents are where you have to go. And right now, independents are liking the progressive platform. And when you campaign on that platform, you win. Now, that flies right in the face of what the DCCC did this week. They endorsed their first 11 candidates. You know, they claim they're neutral. We're in primary season now. They're not endorsing people against Republicans. They claim they are, but they're not. They are endorsing blue dogs and New Dems against progressives.
Mm.
And that is what is so sickening. I wrote about it this morning in my first post about how they, you know, they take a very, very competitive race, like in Tucson, for example, Arizona's second district. There's a woman there in Congress now, a Republican who's going to probably lose her seat, named Martha McSally. And there are a lot of Democrats running. It's generally thought that there are three Democrats who have a real shot to win this seat. None of them are radicals. None of them are, you know, extremists. They're all, you know, kind of in the, a little bit in the center. Two of them are progressives, and one of them is a proven right-wing Democrat. When I say she's a right-wing Democrat, her name is Ann Kirkpatrick. She was in Congress, so we know what her voting record is. She had a horrible voting record. She voted with the Republicans very, very consistently, and Democrats hate her. She's from the northern part of the state. She moved down here looking for another seat. She was afraid to run in her own district where she was born and raised and was in Congress before, so she decided to move down to Tucson, the southern part of the state. In Arizona, the northerners and the southerners don't like each other, and so she's a carpetbagger. And the DCCC just endorsed her. She now, I just want to give you a little bit of an example of how bad she was. I'm not going to, you know, you can tell me any topic and I can tell you how bad she is on anything. You know, she's great on women's choice.
Okay.
She's a woman.
Right.
But you know, yeah, she's good on that. But when you come to any of the economic issues, she's basically a Republican. She was a new Dem. But just on the NRA, let's just talk about the NRA for a second. She isn't just someone who got an A-plus rating from the NRA. When they need a Democrat to go and speak at one of their conventions and to put down other Democrats who are against their crackpottery, they pick her.
Wow.
She's the one. She hosted their convention or whatever it was in Arizona and talked about how she will fight to the end to defending the NRA stands on this thing and that thing and the other thing. That we're talking about a really bad, bad person, and this is who the Democrat, the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, endorsed, even though there are two really excellent candidates in the in this race who are both competitive with her. They're raising money the same way she is. They're not. It's not like she's raising all the money. They're raising nothing. That's usually what the DCCC looks at, and they're very credible candidates. And they're both from the area. They didn't just move in. They're from there. One of them is a doctor and a I don't know if he's still in the state senate, but a former state senator named Matt Hines. And Matt's pretty good. You know, not quite as progressive as I'd like him to be, but pretty, you know, still progressive. And then the other one is a woman named Mary Mattiella, and she seems to be really progressive and pretty awesome person. Now, she was Obama's Undersecretary of the Army.
Wow.
So she was been in Washington. She moved back. So being an Undersecretary of the Army, even though she, you know, you have to be a civilian to be that, her job was the equivalent of a brigadier general. And she's quite an amazing woman. And whether she's the nominee or Matt's the nominee or Ann Kirkpatrick is the nominee, that should be up to the people in the Tucson area to decide.
Yep.
And instead you've got the DCCC running in there and telling all the donors, give the money to Ann Kirkpatrick. And that's what they're doing around the country. They're doing the same thing they always do, picking these dreadful, horrible, right of center, corrupt candidates and doing all they can to step on the progressives who are running. That is the old horrible DCCC. And when I confronted them on it, they have a million excuses, and you know everything is an excuse, and they're full of crap.
I don't get how what they can say is an excuse. I mean, first of all, they should stay out of the primaries.
In this particular race, it's, oh, well, everybody loves Ann. She was our colleague. The fact of the matter is that Ann can only win when she wins elections when it's a presidential year and people, you know, just don't know any better and they just vote for the Democrats straight through. Or in a wave election she won, that she could win then. But in midterm, she always loses.
Wow.
She gets into Congress and then she loses the next year, the next cycle, I mean. And that's happened, I think, three times with her. I mean, Democrats don't like her. And the DCCC doesn't understand that because they like her. She's one of them. They look in the mirror and they see the same thing that they want elected. They see these conservative Democrats, and that's who they want. Ben Ray Lujan, the head of the DCCC, or Denny Heck, the head of the recruiting committee. These are conservatives. They're both conservative guys. Denny Heck is a full-on New Dem. And they want people who look like them. And I don't mean physically look like them, but who have the same kind of ideas and will vote the same way that they do. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for conservatives like they are. They're not looking for people who want change.
So they come up with their red to blue list, and instead of waiting until the general, they do it at the beginning of primary season to stack the deck with their conservadem candidates.
They didn't, you know, they just endorsed 11 people. Not one of them is a progressive. They're all conservatives, every one of them.
Wow.
Eight of them are either already endorsed by the Blue Dogs or the New Dems. Eight of the 11 are already endorsed by the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. And then they wonder why they lose. They have so many opportunities to win now, and yet they are stacking the deck against themselves to lose. Because what their hope is that no matter how shitty of a candidate they nominate, they're going to win anyway because it's going to be an anti-Trump, anti-Ryan tsunami, and they'll be able to sweep in these crappy candidates. And they may be right. That's the thing, Nicole. They may actually be right. That was Rahm Emanuel's theory in 2006 when he was the chairman of the DCCC. Just put in all the garbage and get it elected in the wave election. And he was correct. And they may be correct this time. But you know what happened? In the next midterm,
they lose.
After Rahm's big victories, they all got defeated.
Right.
Not one of them is still in Congress. They're all defeated. And that's what the DCCC is going to do now. Maybe they'll elect Ann Kirkpatrick again. And then the next time, in the next midterm, Democrats won't come out to vote for her. That's what's going to happen. They're not going to want to vote for her because she's a piece of shit.
Wow. You know, Howie Klein, you put up a post at Down with Tyranny on Monday. Should the 2018 midterms just be a referendum on Trump, or do Democrats have to be offering a viable alternative? It's a great piece, by the way. I'll post a link to it on my blog today after the show. But you asked a lot of people who are operatives or candidates of what we need to do. And it seems like, you know, most of them, the ones who have a clue are the ones who are saying, no, we need to be about something. We need to be more than just anti-Trump. That's not enough.
Right. And there are, that was the overwhelming, first of all, I think every candidate said that.
Right.
Or maybe there was one person who didn't agree. Oh, right. It was a good progressive state legislator in Virginia, a good guy, but he got it wrong. His position was, you know, Trump is, he just saw what happened in Virginia.
Right.
You know, where Trump just was so unpopular that he swept, I think, 15 Republicans out of the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the conventional wisdom was that the Democrats would win between 2 and 4 seats in the House of Delegates. All 100 members of the House of Delegates were up for re-election or election. And it was thought that the Democrats would pick up 2, 3, or 4 seats. The Republicans said, as long as they don't pick up more than 6, who cares? If they pick up more than 6, we are cooked. And the Democrats have picked up 15. There are recounts going on for a number of seats now. If the Democrats win 17, then they take over the legislature, and then the Republicans really are cooked. But in any case, they're looking at it now as catastrophic. But anyway, this one legislator, Democratic legislator, who was reelected by a gigantic landslide, he just saw what that Trump factor was. And it was huge. I mean, the Democrats won all 3 statewide seats, and they won lots and lots of down ballot seats, much more than anyone predicted. Nobody thought that their gubernatorial candidate, Ed Gillespie, you know, some people thought he might win. Other people thought that Northam, the conservative Democrat, would win. But everybody kind of agreed it was going to be like a 2-point race.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of them would win around by two points or so, or the other one would win by 2 points or so. No one expected that it was going to be a massive landslide. Northam won by over 9 points.
Right.
And there is not a single poll that predicted that. The guy I asked is looking at that, and so he said, you know, you don't need anything. All you need is Trump to keep running his face, and Democrats will be fine. But everybody else said otherwise. Every candidate I spoke to, every operative I spoke to, every former member of Congress I spoke to, all said the same thing. The Democrats have to have good candidates, and they have to have They have to be offering something. It can't just be anti-Trump, anti-Trump. Sure, you want to maximize the anti-Trump feeling. You want to maximize the anti-Paul Ryan feeling. You want to even maximize the Roy Moore feeling. But if the Democrats are offering just lesser of two evil type candidates, or not offering a solid program that's going to help people in their lives, then, you know, what's the good of it? I mean, it's just going to keep people from coming out to vote.
Right.
That's what it does.
Right. Well, this is why primaries are so important. So you mentioned the other two candidates running in the Tucson in Arizona's 2nd District, Matt Hines and Mary Mattiella. Hopefully, because as you said, you don't need to, you know, raise inordinate amounts of money. You need to be in there. Hopefully the people will see it and they will come out and vote for the more progressive candidates. Not only
hopefully, but of course, that we're talking about a primary now,
yes.
And we're talking about the DCCC using all of their power to do what they can in that and other races. That isn't the only race, of course.
Right.
They're doing this in, you know, so far it's 11 races, but they have every intention of doing it more. So I spoke to a friend of mine who works at the DCCC about this, and he denied it. And I realized he was being honest with me. He was denying it because he didn't know. He literally did not know what the Democrats pulled. So he's using excuses to me. Well, we tried to endorse candidates who weren't in competitive races. So
uh-oh.
I said, really? What about this? He said, oh, I didn't realize that was, someone got that wrong. How did that happen?
Uh-oh.
And I said, okay, how about this district? And he said, wow, they got it wrong again. Yeah, right, they got it wrong. They try to get it wrong. They try to pull the wool over the eyes of their own members. And then, this guy was not being dishonest with me. He was being honest. He just didn't know. And then the next excuse he used was, well, they're going for people who raise the most money.
Nope.
That isn't even true. I mean, maybe Ann Kirkpatrick is raising slightly more money,
mm-hmm.
but Matt Hines, you know, I don't know, she might have raised $300,000, and Matt Hines raised like $280,000. I mean, it was, you know, they were close. It was close enough. So they're being dishonest, and they're being dishonest to their own members as well. It was like a few weeks ago, I think I told you, that they had this candidates day or candidates week at the DCCC,
mm-hmm.
and they invited conservatives, and they didn't invite a lot of the progressives. They invited some progressives, but in the races where they were trying to target, closely, like for example in California 48, Dana Rohrabacher's district, they know they're going to win that district. So to them, it's very, very important that they get a conservative in there. They are petrified that a progressive might wind up in Congress. And the fact of the matter is there's a whole bunch of really pretty dreadful conservative men, some ex-Republicans running. One of them is so awful. This is a guy who literally he is campaigning on one thing. I am a Reagan Democrat.
Oh, God.
That's what he says. The
oh,
Reagan
God.
Democrat, and he's very wealthy, and he's a self-funder, and he's just absolutely terrible. He doesn't even live in the district. He lives in another district, and he said the reason that he's not running in the other district is because he thinks the Republican, Ed Royce, is fantastic, and he doesn't want to campaign against Ed Royce. Ed Royce is a nightmare and a racist, but he loves Ed Royce, so he doesn't want to campaign there. He picked another district to campaign in as a Reagan Democrat. And then there were two other men in this race who are raising a lot of money, who are wealthy, and they are both of them are endorsed by the New Dems already, which means that the New Dems are very careful who they endorse, and they won't endorse anyone unless they're absolutely conservative on economic issues, and so they all got invited to the DCCC Candidates Week, and then there's one woman running who is competitive in terms of raising six figures. So she's raising real money. And she's the only, first of all, she's the only woman in the race. And second of all, she's the only progressive in the race. She's running on a kind of a Bernie kind of platform. She has a huge grassroots following. People love her. The other guys do events and no one cares much.
Mm-hmm.
And she does events and, lots and lots of people turn out. They're excited about her. And this, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, who's a very, very smart woman, Christine Pelosi,
uh-huh.
was talking with me about this the other day, talking about the races like the one in against Rohrabacher, where what matters is the the tremendous energy that the candidate and enthusiasm that certain candidates can get going, and other candidates just don't even know how to do it. One of the DCCC candidates in that district is a guy named Hans Kierstead. He was endorsed by the New Dems. And, you know, on paper, Hans looks like a really good candidate. He's world famous for some stem cell inventions that he made, and then he became an entrepreneur, and he made millions and millions of dollars in selling his work, his medical work, mm-hmm. and he's well known. But that doesn't transfer to being a good politician.
No.
It's like people fall asleep when he talks, and no one is interested in him except the DCCC, and even they realize now that, oops, we might have made a mistake backing this horse, because no one else is. He's just not a good candidate. And so he's running this dull, boring, energy-free race, doesn't know anything about the issues, and is just not a good – you know, he's a nice Canadian guy, but he's not a good candidate. Whereas Laura Oatman, the progressive woman in that district, she's on fire. She is the kind of person that's got this great energy going, who people love, and, you know, maybe she'll win. But she's being, you know, demoralized by the DCCC trying to undermine her. She calls up people – asking for money, and they tell her that the DCCC told them not to give to her, that to give to Hans or to give to this other guy, Holly Rauta. And, you know, I mean, you don't want to run against your own party.
Right,
I mean,
that's horrible. No. As well have a third party. I mean, if you're going to have to climb that hill, which this is the reason that, you know, they're running as a Democrat, so that it's one of the two major parties that they don't have to climb that hill. And now,
unlike Harley Rauta, she's been a Democrat her whole life. He was a Republican.
Wow.
And the Democrats like him, even though he used to be a Republican. Here's a woman who was a Democrat from forever and has been fighting in the trenches forever.
Horrible.
And you know, and he comes along. I mean, last year he gave money to what's his name? His name slipped my mind. The governor, John Kasich. He gave money to John Kasich. You know, hey, you know, John Kasich might not be as bad as Trump, but, you know, we're Democrats. We give money to
the
to Bernie or Hillary, not to John Kasich.
Exactly. Wow. So it's going to be an uphill fight. But again, you said it's the progressive who has the momentum. But it sucks that she's got to overcome the work of her party to get through to win the primary.
Well, that's why they endorsed. That's why they you know, do what they can to you know, they certainly, that's why they do what they can and do everything they can to harm her and to help them. Now, Ted Lieu is the regional vice chair for the West Coast, and he absolutely put his foot down on this and would not allow them to endorse any candidates in California. So when you look at that list of 11, there were no Californians endorsed, and they would have loved to endorse some of their shitty candidates. But Ted Lieu said, no way, you are not endorsing anybody in California, period. And he just wouldn't let them, and they didn't do it. But, you know, they don't even have a regional vice chair in Texas. I mean, they lost their regional vice chair months ago, and they're too lame to even appoint another one. So Texas, which is so rich in winnable seats, and there's no one to help the candidates. I mean, Ted, he believes in neutrality. I mean, even candidates that I happen to know that who Ted loves, and the DCCC tried to lure him by saying, well, we'll endorse so-and-so, knowing that Ted loves the candidate,
mm-hmm.
Ted said no.
Right.
He said, we are neutral. The DCCC has to be neutral, even when it was to benefit a candidate he really, really thinks would make a great member of Congress. But it's a competitive primary, and Ted said you can endorse when there's no primary. When it's a general election, then that's when we endorse. That's when we use our resources to help the Democrat, but not against other Democrats. And
that's
for some
terrible.
Reason, Ben Ray Lujan and Nancy Pelosi don't understand that.
Well, maybe we can get Ted Lieu to talk some sense into these people, because he's got it right. Now, I did read somewhere that they put Wisconsin, the Paul Ryan, Randy Bryce race on the targeted list.
I believe that they did. They did. And Randy isn't interested in their endorsement.
Good for him.
Until after the primary. There
Good
is a primary
him.
There. It's not a real primary. It's some vanity candidate. But but Randy respects the fact that she's running and doesn't want the DCCC interfering in the race until it's him against Ryan. When
right.
it's him against Ryan, they can do it. You know, he'll want their help, of
That's
course.
That's how it should be. That's exactly how it should be. Howie Klein.
But he doesn't want their help. They've offered it. He doesn't want their help
right.
when there's a primary. Even a silly primary that's not even real. In her mind, it's real. You know, she probably won't even get 10% of the vote. But she has her hopes and aspirations. And, you know, I don't think she's working for Ryan, although she does use the exact same talking points that he uses right. to try to tear down Randy. But Randy says, hey, until the primary is over, no DCCC in my race.
All right. Howie Klein, we're out of time again. A half hour goes by so fast when you're on. Thank you, as always. Find Howie at downwithtyranny.com and the Blue America Pack, and I'll put links to both and the articles we talked about up on the blog. Thank you, Howie.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Nicole.
Bye-bye. All right. Tomorrow, one of those great candidates from Texas will be joining us. His name is Derek Crowe. We'll talk to you then.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The House is set to vote Thursday on its version of the GOP tax bill, which would cut taxes by more than $1.4 trillion over 10 years. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin stepped up as the first Republican to say he will not support the plan. He says because it disproportionately benefits corporations at the expense of other businesses. Johnson spoke with CNN's Chris Cuomo Thursday morning.
You give more money to people like me, and then I will use private investment to drive benefits to the middle class so they get a booster on top of whatever their actual tax cut is. Economically, it's dubious, and practically, we've seen that it doesn't work that way every time. You shouldn't be guaranteeing it as an outcome. How can you be for this bill when it does exactly that?
Well, I'm not for the current version.
But because on the corporate side, what if they fix the corporate side and the individual side stays the same?
Well, what I want to see is the information to prove the kind of economic growth we're going to get with all of our tax provisions. And again, I think it's kind of a heavy lift to say on, you know, cutting individual taxes that really boosts economic growth. It does to a certain extent, but all the economic growth driving in this tax proposal is really on the business side with 100% expensing, so it's easier for businesses to expand and create more good-paying jobs, boost wages.
Although the bill is expected to pass in the House, there's mounting concern in the Senate. Senator Susan Collins of Maine is worried that middle-income consumers would see their tax cut erased by an increase in health insurance premiums caused by the repeal of the individual mandate. Ron Wyden, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee, notes that the corporate tax breaks are permanent, but the individual cuts would expire in 2025. And then there were nine, as more women come forward to accuse Roy Moore of improper sexual advances.
Four more women have stepped forward to describe alleged encounters they had with Moore. Nine women in all have now publicly shared stories about their interactions with him. According to the Washington Post, one woman named Gina Richardson says when she was a senior in high school, she met Moore while working at Sears. She says he asked her for her phone number and she said no. The Post writes, quote, a few days later, she says she was in trigonometry class at Gadsden High when she was summoned to the principal's office over the intercom in her classroom. She had a telephone call. I said, hello, Richardson recalls, and the male on the other line said, Gina, this is Roy Moore. A few days later, after he asked her out at Sears, she relented and agreed, feeling both nervous and flattered. They met that night at a movie theater in the mall after she got off work, a date that ended with Moore driving her to a car in a dark parking lot behind Sears and giving her what she called an unwanted, forceful kiss that left her scared. The local news in Alabama spoke to two different women. According to AL.com, the first was an adult when she says Roy Moore groped her when she was in his law office on legal business with her mother in 1991. Second woman was reportedly 17. Kelly Harrison Thorpe said Moore asked her if she'd go out with him sometime. I just kind of said, do you know how old I am, she recalled. And he said, yeah, I go out with girls your age all the time.
The only group with the power to force him out of the race, the Alabama Republican Party, met last night. And you would think this would be the moment, but they did not take up the issue. In fact, it never left the conversation phase. Then Sean Hannity, who gave more 24 hours to explain himself before pulling his support back down after Moore wrote the Fox News host an open letter.
On Wednesday afternoon, Philip Jauregui, an attorney representing Moore, in a press conference demanded that accuser Beverly Nelson and her attorney Gloria Allred release the yearbook that Moore allegedly signed in 1977, questioning whether the signature was Moore's and saying that they wanted it examined for handwriting analysis. Neither Jauregui nor Moore's campaign manager addressed the four original allegations detailed in the Washington Post. A new poll conducted by the Republicans show Moore trailing Democrat Doug Jones by 12 points. The president is back in Washington after a 12-day trip to Asia that he deemed a, quote, tremendous success.
Last night I returned from a historic 12-day trip to Asia. During our travels, this is exactly what the world saw. A strong, proud and confident America. Our message was clear and well received. America is here to compete, to do business, and to defend our values and our security.
A group of House Democrats led by Steve Cohen of Tennessee introduced articles of impeachment against Donald Trump on Wednesday.
We are introducing articles of impeachment to remove President Trump from office. We have taken this action because of great concern for our country and our Constitution, our national security, and our democracy. We believe that President Trump has violated the Constitution, and we've introduced five articles of impeachment. The first is obstruction of justice, which deals with Mr. Comey's firing. The second is a violation of the Constitution's foreign emolument clause, which deals with monies he's taken from foreign powers without the consent of Congress. The third is a violation of the domestic emoluments clause, which deals with monies he's made from the United States and as personal businesses beyond that of his salary, which is also forbidden by our Constitution. The fourth is undermining our federal judiciary, and the fifth is undermining freedom of the press.
Cohen acknowledged that their efforts have no chance of success while Republicans control both houses of Congress. I got the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.